when you're actually trying to get a point across, make sure you do it in a way that is efficient and intelligent. And when you do that and it becomes a habit of yours, people will give you this time of the day, no matter how long it takes you, because they know that what you're about to say is worth hearing. I consider it to be the world's greatest social filter. The friendships I've made, the relationships I've been in, have all been fantastic. Mm. So,
wow.
I win.
I win.
Stuttering, the world's greatest social filter, with J. Jones Doyle, today on Stutter Talk.
Now that everything is gonna be okay, now that everything is gonna be alright, what if baby I cannot see the sound, what if baby I cannot hear the light?
Welcome to Stutter Talk. I'm Roisin McManus, and you're listening to the first episode of Going After It, a Stutter Talk series about ambition, success, and stuttering. I'm here in beautiful St. Petersburg, Florida, with our first guest, J. Jones Doyle.
Happy to have you on the show.
Thank you.
Jay is from Montreal, Canada. He is currently working as an intern at the United Nations Convention on Biological Diversity in the Business and Biodiversity Program. He is just finishing up his Master's of Science in Business Administration. When he was studying that, he was specializing in marketing, and his focus of study is on environmentally friendly motivation within a business context. That's a mouthful, Jay.
It really is. I've had moments of disfluency with that has taken a long time.
It's a lot of...
So well done.
Lots of bees in there.
Yeah.
before we get into what you're doing in your business and in your, you know, professional life, I'm sure the listeners just want to hear a little bit about you personally.
Okay.
Or your stuttering story, or whatever you feel like would kind of help explain your story.
Sit with me. Okay, I'm 29. I live in Montreal. I've always lived in Montreal. Big question. I am a father. My son actually just turned 8 years old.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Really?
No.
Oh,
that's awesome.
Ta-da. he turned 8 last Friday. He just played his first golf tournament on Saturday. He came in second, so I was very proud of him anyway, but he did well.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I have been I used to play hockey, and I coached junior hockey for 2.5 years.
Cool.
What else about me?
You stutter.
I stutter.
That's a very... We also should tell the listeners that we're broadcasting from the National Stuttering Association annual conference St. Petersburg, Florida.
Yes, which is beautiful,
awesome.
And hot, and I'm sad that I was leaving tomorrow.
Yeah.
But Montreal is actually harder than it is here.
Really?
Yeah, it's
how does that even? How does that even happen?
It's just ridiculous. I don't know what to say.
How was your time here been?
It's been great. I mean, I've been coming, well, this is my eighth or ninth conference. Wow, old. I've been coming since I was 17, but I took off a few years when the scheduling happened to directly overlap with my son Ben's Truman's birthday.
Mm-hmm.
Because at that point, I'm just not.
Yeah.
Gonna do that.
Yeah. Sorry, son. Sorry. More important things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's been fun. I did my usual presentation on why stuttering need not necessarily be a limiting factor in your success.
Yeah.
In life, which I believe wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
And I've just been having fun hanging out, catching up with old friends, and partying.
I remember my first conference in Cleveland. It was 2 years ago, and you did that workshop. And you were talking about that, how stuttering doesn't have to hold you back, and the myths surrounding stuttering and kind of how it can limit you. And I remember being really, really inspired by you in that conference.
Thank you.
So I'm so happy to have you on the show talking about exactly that.
Yeah.
That, you know, how to live your life fully yeah. with your stuttering, not letting it necessarily direct you.
Well, that's it. I think it's probably important to point out to the listener that I also have cerebral palsy, which compounds things. So I've got a bit of a double whammy happening.
Right, so. More to learn from, basically. Mm-hmm. Go with that. So tell me a little bit about what you're doing now in terms of your job at the UN?
What I'm doing now at the UN, actually it was really funny because I had applied for this position and I got a call on my cell phone when I was in Toronto visiting my girlfriend at the time, and I had to do a phone interview for this thing.
Oh my god.
And it was just like,
worst nightmare.
Really? Like, really? This is the UN. I can't just come in and say hi. Come on now. But yeah, I did a 20 minute phone interview and got the job. What I'm doing is, a lot of businesses don't recognize that being profitable and being environmentally conscious are not mutually exclusive. In fact, there is a ton of money and opportunity available if you take into account, specifically related to what I'm doing now, biodiversity into your core business model. There are a lot of opportunities to reduce operational costs, to increase profit, increase employee loyalty, satisfaction, productivity, efficiency. From a branding point of view, it's fantastic. PR is great, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But up to now, a lot of companies had been approached my to address this issue from the point of view of you should do this because it's good for the environment and for a company that just doesn't resonate because they say, well, great, but I can't not make money. So,
yeah.
Thanks for no thanks.
Right.
What I do is I take the same idea, but I speak the language. I help to demonstrate how this idea will, as I said, reduce your operational costs. And when you show them the money and the opportunity, and you can actually project it out, they go, oh. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, it's especially for a publicly owned company which is one that has shareholders. They're legally not allowed to take any decision that will knowingly reduce the profitability of the company.
Really?
It makes sense. A law to protect the shareholders from a management that decides to tank the company. But how that affects us is that how it affects environmentally friendly initiatives is that unless you can demonstrate where the money is, they can't legally do it. So that was an umbrella description of why I do what I do. What I'm doing specifically at the UN is I'm basically the webmaster and manager of the UN's database of tools, mechanisms, certifications, associations, all over the world as they apply to business and biodiversity. And I've also been made one of the editors of our, I'll call it a newsletter, but it's more, it's put out twice a year, and it has articles from industry, from other UN organizations, and it's a pretty big production.
Well, all of that is really interesting. And I'm going to have a whole other show just talking about that topic, not even about stuttering, because it's a fascinating thing. And I can tell that you really seem to have a passion for this area that seems very personal. Like you have a very personal investment in these ideas.
I do, because it just makes sense.
Yeah.
I'm not an environmentalist. I'm not out here flogging ideas because we need to have more trees. I say it like that because that when you take that approach, people don't listen.
Right.
It's not that I don't care about the environment. I do. But what really interests me is how is the psychology behind what gets people to go, oh, I'm gonna listen now.
Yeah, you kind of have to come from where they're coming from to really change the way that they think.
Exactly. I mean, I'm helped because of my undergrad was in perceptual psychology. So, and you know, I'm a master's in marketing, which is applied psychology. So
right.
It all underpinned by a fascination with what motivates people to do what they do.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So along the way, when you were studying as an undergraduate and then a graduate student, and now that you're interning at this, you know, very, for lack of a better term, impressive institution, where did stuttering play a role? I mean, it's obvious that your passion and your intellectual ideas sort of drove your studies. Was there ever a point where you said to yourself, can I do this if I stutter? Or am I going to be able to work in this field if I stutter?
Not as it applies to...
I want to stop you really quickly 1 second. Yeah. And I also want to include in that CP, cerebral palsy, because I think that this issue could be applied to anything holding you back. So if you want to talk about that also.
From an academic point of view, it was never a concern because we live in a pretty politically correct society where it's almost... I don't use it, but it's almost positive because you get more leeway because you stutter. People are prepared to give you a little bit more time and a little bit more attention. The questioning of my abilities came in was I didn't really get involved in extracurricular activities much at school in my undergrad, but I always regret it. So when I picked up my master, I said, okay, I said, head first, you're in. And I applied to be part of various associations. And the first time that I really questioned what I could do was when I was approached by the former president of my school's business graduate student association, and I went to the John Molson School of Business, which is one of Canada's most high-ranked business schools, and it was suggested that I run for president next year, which was 2 years ago.
Okay.
And that was a moment of hesitation where I went, okay, this is getting real.
Yeah.
I'm going to be asking the next wave of high-end CEOs and management, whether or not they will put their faith in me to lead them for a year, will they do it?
Hmm.
Or have I just been living in this comfortable bubble of academia where everything's padded?
Hmm.
And I said, okay, I'll run. And I won.
That's awesome.
So I was the president of my school's business graduate student association for a year. And I sat on faculty council, and I represented my school at national leadership conferences, and I had a fair bit of high-end presentation to do. So I had moments like, oh God, if I go up there and I can't say my name, let alone what I'm here to say, how does this reflect back on my school? Luckily, that never happened, and if it had, I think I would have been okay with it, because my school, like, the people put, they knew what might happen, because I had some moments of major disability during my campaign, but they still voted for me, so.
Yeah. Wow. That's a very inspiring thing to hear.
Thanks.
Did you At any point, did you have to kind of push back on people who thought that you could not do something, or is it mostly you had to kind of just convince yourself that you could?
I did have one or two people who indicated that maybe another person should do a particular presentation or this and that. It was funny. Once or twice, I said, okay, I understood this. We had a one-minute slot, and what I was going to say was going to take longer. So, but for the most part, no one stood in my way because they knew me and what I stood for, and I was highly respected within the environment. So, but one of the other aspects is I'm very good at knowing and acknowledging my limits, and there have been instances where I said, okay, this is not something I'm comfortable doing. Would you mind doing this for me?
Yeah.
But those are few and far between. I think they expected that if I was not comfortable, I would tell them. Okay. They didn't need to babysit me.
Yeah, yeah. That's a very powerful place to be when people trust you that you're capable of whatever you set out to do. And if you don't feel for any reason in any situation that maybe at that moment you're not capable of doing something, that you're also humble enough and strong enough to say, I need you to step in here. Yeah. It really, I'm sure a lot of people really trusted you for that reason that you were able to.
It seemed to pay off, so hopefully that was
good. Cool. Yeah. Well, so what are you thinking about in terms of looking forward in terms of after this internship or your career in general?
That's a bit of a hazy one for me right now. I really love to work at the UN. But that's looking more of a long-term plan, because to get into the UN is, in a paid position, is absurd.
Yeah.
Just because their hiring policies require that they stratify across all nations within the UN and gender and race. So I'm white, male, and I'm skinny. Kind of screwed.
And you have an MBA, which is why a lot of people.
Well, I have an MS.
Oh, MS, okay.
But my boss loved me.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that ends up. I don't know. I have to figure that out really fast. Again, it's because I'm tied into Montreal for the next 10 years because of my son, and I have no interest in, being a good parent is priority number one. Everything else is secondary. What I do for a living will be contingent on my ability to be a parent.
Yeah.
Be a pup bear in my mind.
So, Jay, you're obviously a really confident person. You can tell that just by looking at you and talking to you, your sense of humor and your intelligence is really evident. Has that always been something
that you felt, or have you had to kind of work through a lot of that fear and sort of questioning yourself that so many people who stutter do?
I still have fear, you know.
Right.
I've always been positive. I've always been an optimistic person, and I've always liked to engage with people. So it's been very helpful because when you're good at talking to people and good at making people feel at ease, you get a lot more done. So that's been somewhat natural.
Yeah.
I mean, when you're a teenager, you have all these questions in your head about being judged and how people will react to your stutter and all this and that. But I realized early enough that my stuttering, my disability, actually provided me many benefits that if you don't have. Like, for example, I consider to be the world's greatest social filter in terms of if I meet a person, as opposed to if a person who is a non-stutterer meets a person, they will exchange pleasantries. They might get to know each other a little better, a few months go by, and then eventually you figure, I don't really like you, you're not who you said you were, you've been, you know, a bit fake. With me, I open my mouth and I have the answer to that question like that. Because a person who's going to be shallow, ignorant, etc., etc., will react poorly to me. And that's fantastic. Because you just told me that I don't want to waste my time with you.
Yeah.
And I have a better thing to do. And next! it's your loss. And move on.
Yeah.
So I don't consider a negative reaction from someone else to be a reflection of my own personal failure. I consider it to be their own lack of dimensionality and acceptance, and that's great. We'll just go our separate ways, and as a result, the friends I've made, the relationships I've been in, have all been fantastic.
Mm.
So,
wow.
I win.
I win. if there was something that you could say to either yourself at age 14 or anybody out there who stutters and is really kind of maybe doubting their ability to go after what they want to go after, what would it be? Or like,
It would be, this will take a few minutes.
That's fine.
Effective communicator will help you in life. How many home desk people have you seen who are completely fluent? Success is not dependent on fluency. It's dependent on the ability to communicate your message in a way that is likely to get the reaction you want from your audience. Now, the way I achieve this is by having a nice big vocabulary, and by knowing how to use that vocabulary effectively. Because if I know, for example, it will take me 10 seconds to say something, but a person beside me who doesn't start it will take them 5 seconds. I have a responsibility to my listener to make what I'm about to say twice as intelligent, twice as worth hearing. Because if I don't, I can't morally expect them to give me the extra time. If you operate on that principle, you will win. Flat out. Charlie Sheen, you'll be a winner. Because people will respect you far, far, far more if you don't waste the time of stupidity.
The unfortunate thing is I don't think Charlie Sheen took the, really runs by that message.
No, he definitely didn't.
If he did though, he would actually win all the time.
Oh, Charlie Sheen. But I think that's the message of... And I'm not saying don't, be yourself and make a joke, because we all do that. But when you're actually trying to get a point across, make sure you do it in a way that is efficient and intelligent. And when you do that and it becomes a habit of yours, people will give you the time of the day, no matter how long it takes you, because they know that what you're about to say is worth hearing.
Yeah. Well, Ben, thank you.
No problem.
It was so great to have you on the show and to catch up with you in person again.
You too, okay?
Thanks for coming in.
No problem.
And to the viewers, thanks for tuning in. If you have any questions or comments, as usual, you can email. I have my own email account for this series. So you can email me at roisin@stuttertalk.com. And hopefully you enjoy the show. And signing off.
Now that everything is gonna be okay. Now that everything is gonna be alright. What if, baby, I cannot see the sound? What if, baby, I cannot hear the light?